All right, welcome to Highly Questionable. We got Sarah Spain with a lot of, well, the Bears used to be good, so I guess most of those guys are old or dead. And we have Katie Nolan. Let's rock.
Blank. Can't say anything. Can't roast me if there's nothing there.
I thought about it.
We'll find a way.
Do you expect the Eagles to get the big haul they want for Carson Wentz?
All right, it was just a couple of days ago that we were getting word that the Eagles were going to move Carson Wentz in the coming days. Like, they were sure that this was going to happen. Even though apparently they haven't gotten an offer that they like, Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network is saying that they're still waiting on a fair offer for Carson Wentz. And of course, we're dealing with subjective terms. It raised the question, what do you think is a fair offer for Carson Wentz? Because one could argue a fair offer for Carson Wentz is one where you send him to a team and put a pick in his pocket and they send you back like a seventh round pick, because that's how bad he was. I don't know what exactly the Eagles think they're going to get for him, because the net for Matt Stafford was really a first round pick. Jared Goff and the other first round pick wound up canceling themselves out. I don't know what they think they're going to get for him. I don't know what they're waiting on, but I got bad news for him. The rest of the league knows that you guys think that he's a bum. They might think that he's a bum too, but maybe a bum that could be saved. Teams don't give premium assets with the caveat, but maybe he can be saved.
Yeah, the first thing you said is so smart, Bo. It feels like now it was the Eagles who was telling everyone, this deal is imminent. It could happen any second. And by that, we mean, if you're interested, come give us an offer, give us something. And everyone's like, no, we're good, because you benched him. And you also fired your coach to try to save the relationship. And now you're still trying to sell him, which means you didn't save it, which means things are awkward and terrible. And he can't be even around for Zoom meetings and things, because that's how awkward it's gotten. So you have no leverage. So no, they aren't going to get the big haul that they want, because he's not that good. He was benched and they don't want him.
Yeah. Why did they fire Doug Peterson then? This is all very confusing. It feels like the Eagles are, like, their front office is playing poker blindfolded. It's like they're not paying attention to anything that has happened and are just like, but this should probably work, right? He deserves this. Like, you've shown us, or you've tried to show us, that he's not worth that much. And now suddenly you're expecting everybody to pay him on the possibility they could turn him back into being worth a lot. But that takes a lot of work. And it's funny that you bring up the Stafford-Goff situation, Bo, because I feel like they think he's the Stafford in whatever trade this may eventually be, but he's the Goff. And it's not really worth any of this. It doesn't make any sense. And then just separately, I have to point out, because he's a friend, that it's Mike Garofalo, because he'll get really mad at me.
Oh, sorry.
I let you say Garofalo.
No, thank you for correcting me on that one. I did not realize it. Now, to answer your question on Doug Peterson, why'd they fire him? Because they want somebody that they can control, and they didn't feel like he was the kind of guy that they can control. But I have to ask you guys a question. Like, is it really that good? Because y'all would know this. I don't have any way of knowing this. Is it really that good that you can be an outright bum, have one of the worst seasons that anybody has ever had, where you look by DVOA, by the other players that had seasons like those, it was either guys who never started again after that happened, or guys who were in their rookie season. Is it so good and intoxicating that you can play that way and then have the nerve to not answer their phone calls? Right? The level of privilege that must exude in your life, where you can play like this sorry dude played and people don't even like you. And you're like, no, I'm not going to take your phone calls. Who the hell are you? Jalen Hurts is over here like, what?
Are the Warriors being a little too careful with Steph Curry?
Okay, the Warriors lost last night to the Spurs 105-100. I came into this season with the question as to whether or not Steph Curry is one of those players that raises the floor of your team. He definitely raises the ceiling, but would he be a guy that could take a bad team and make it look pretty good? He has been taking what seems to be a bad team and making it look pretty good. The thing is, he's still playing numbers more in line with what he was doing for the Warriors when he wasn't having to play fourth quarters, because Steve Kerr doesn't see any reason to burn him out. Here he is talking about it.
Is there a temptation to try to push it with Steph minute-wise in some of these games? I mean, I think you guys were a plus three with him, but maybe like a minus eight tonight with him off.
Right, right. Not for me. You know, I'm into the long game. We're counting on having Steph here for a long time, many, many years ahead. And I'm not interested in grinding through this season, which is already a very difficult season, given the COVID regulations and just the nature of the games themselves. You know, these eerie, empty stadiums. This is for me, for our organization. You know, we're not throwing Steph out there for 40 minutes to chase wins. We got another game tomorrow. We want Steph to be playing at a high level for many years, so we're going to stay very disciplined and try to keep him at that 34-35 minute mark.
All right, now this is tricky because this is a 12-12 team right now. If they burn Steph Curry out to get these wins, they're probably not going to be a championship contender. But this trips over something that we've seen from Curry and that he's basically said, which is he is a dude who is a role player in the NBA and he coaches with a bit of a role player's mentality. He's also a guy who played for Phil Jackson. He believes in the importance of keeping all the guys engaged, and they all need to touch the ball. They all need chances at scoring. They all need all of this. And what this team seems like it needs is Steph Curry to do more shooting, right? And it seems like as a coach, the easiest thing in the world is to say, hey, Steph, go out there and shoot some more. So I don't think he's wrong in his perspective, but he's going to have a hard time convincing anybody that he's right.
Hearing Steve Kerr say that he's playing a long game, to me, sounds like I'm not trying to win games, which is a strategy, but it's not one that if I were a Warriors fan, I would be super thrilled about. I want to keep Steph for the long term. But contracts are also a thing. You'd have to keep him here. Like, none of this makes a ton of sense to me and would bum me out. I like to watch games, have teams play to win them. And it seems like when Steph's on the floor, they win. And then when he's not, they lose. And the losing outweighs the winning, which ends up in a loss of a game.
It actually makes total sense to me. He only said half of it. And it was still more than most people say in, you know, we're going to want him for the long haul. We're not going to use him right now to chase wins. Like, most coaches don't tell you that. They're going to say, we're going to do whatever it takes. They're not going to tell you to plan for the future. But the part he didn't say when he said the weird eeriness of games is Clay is out and we're not good. Mm-hmm. We're not going to win even if we play him all the minutes. So why would we do that? It's easier to sell during COVID because the fans can't say I'm spending thousands of dollars on tickets and you're not trying, because ain't no fans spending any money on tickets because they aren't there. So it's a little easier to sell right now. And it's easier because this is a team that brought you a dynastic run not that long ago. You're not asking them to look at a team on the way up and say, why aren't you trying your best? We need to see what we got with this superstar. We need to take advantage of every minute. They're saying, look, we know what we look like when we can win, and this ain't it. So we're not going to burn out a guy that we hope we can put the pieces around to try to make another run at it next year, the year after. This makes sense to me. Not everyone has to be happy about it, but I fully understand.
All right, now let's get a look, though, at how that game ended. You may have seen that clip earlier. We showed Steph with his mouthpiece, and he was looking like this. This is what made him look like that.
Still looking for Steph.
8 seconds left.
Now Draymond's got it.
Why'd he do that?
Draymond shot a three with 5 seconds left. Why?
You got
Draymond
time.
Called he thought, this.
He
the
thought they're probably
going to
foul him right away.
Ever.
And he just anticipated it.
We all have that friend that is our smartest dumb friend ever. They're like a lawyer and they're super successful. And then every once in a while, they like don't know where the sun sets and rises and stuff like that. And you're like, how? That is Draymond. Like, half the time you're being told that he's the smartest guy out there and he's playing chess while you're playing checkers. And then he does this.
He thought he was going to get fouled. And they were like, nope, we're just going to stand here.
And then Steve Kerr was like, I probably should have told Draymond that Pop doesn't like to foul in that situation.
Important to know. Something you could have told me yesterday.
Up next on HQ. But when he talks about this generation of guys, I mean, isn't he kind of in this generation? Didn't he just retire like 5 or 6 years ago? He knows how good these guys are because he actually played against these guys. And in fact, this revolution we're talking about, he was kind of at the vanguard of it. The dude's 7 feet tall and once played a game at shooting guard. Yeah, he's going to talk these guys up because these guys are his sons in the NBA. He's not going to sound like Charles Barkley because Charles Barkley played in a completely different time.
What's your reaction to KG saying that most guys from his era could not play in the NBA today?
All right, Kevin Garnett has got a book. He is pushing the book. That means you do interviews. He did an interview with Sports Illustrated where he gave a really interesting look at what it takes to play in the NBA these days and talked about this three-point shooting from the standpoint of athleticism, talking about guys running down the court as fast as they can and then stopping on a dime and shooting a three and how hard that is. And KG says that most guys from his era would not be able to play today in the NBA, which is the inverse of what you normally hear from older players when they talk about the modern guys. Here's the thing, though. we're acting like Kevin Garnett is a lot older than he actually is. Like, there's something about him that makes him feel like he's 65 years old because he's a maniac in a very old school sort of way. But when he talks about this generation of guys, I mean, isn't he kind of in this generation? Didn't he just retire like 5 or 6 years ago? He knows how good these guys are because he actually played against these guys. And in fact, this revolution we're talking about, he was kind of at the vanguard of it. The dude's 7 feet tall and once played a game at shooting guard. Yeah, he's going to talk these guys up because these guys are his sons in the NBA. He's not going to sound like Charles Barkley because Charles Barkley played in a completely different time. Kevin Garnett was at the beginning of this. He knows how good these dudes are because he had to guard them.
You're 100% right. I was reading this thinking like, but you're kind of the first unicorn, right? Like KG was my favorite player to watch back in the day because I love the fact that he was a big who would sometimes bring the ball up or shoot a three and he had a mobility to him. As much as I respect Shaq, I didn't find that as enjoyable to watch as a guy who could move like KG. Now we see guys all over the league that are 6'11", 7-footers that are playing that unicorn style. You're right, Bo. He's sort of like the middle ground between the generation that says you could never guard us now because hand checking, because rule changes, and the new guys that are like you could never play this style because of the athleticism and the speed and the versatility and the no position basketball. I think KG is right. Now, I don't know that he's saying this, so I'm going to assume, but if his point is that those players would need to be dropped into now and be trained differently and coached differently in order to succeed, then I agree with them. I'm not going to go ahead and say that those guys would be physically incapable. They would need to get caught up though. Because he points out Michael Jordan as a perfect example, like these guys could not cover Jordan right now, and that is a guy from the old era. So I think he's not insulting the talent of that previous generation. He's merely saying that the game has changed so much. You drop him in, it's going to be a wake-up call.
Although I'm sure somebody from the old generation is going to take it as offense that you are personally insulting me, and they took that personally. Yeah, Bo, I think you made a really great point that it's KG kind of blessing the reflection of the change that he caused in the league, and that makes perfect sense to me. What was more interesting to me about this interview was when he mentioned that David Stern, when he used to call meetings, would sit on a stage, an elevated stage, so that the players would be below them when having conversations. And KG was like, well, I would stand up because I wanted to look eye to eye with these people. But fascinating to think when you're having meetings with a bunch of tall guys, the only way you can talk down to them is by building yourself a stage.
Well, rest in peace to David Stern. But let's just say he was a ball handler, a point guard, a distributor in the height distribution, which is to say that he was sitting on a stage and Kevin Garnett could stand up and still be at eye to eye.
Are you here for baseball unjuicing the balls, or do you just want to see more dingers?
All right. Athletic has got a report that baseball is going to change up the baseball in order to make it a little bit less lively. This is a baseball, by the way, that they swear they didn't juice up recently in order to increase the home run count. If they decide to do this, this is cool. This is my question, though, for people who watch baseball and for fans of baseball, or maybe even more for casual baseball fans. Are home runs making anybody watch baseball in 2021? Like when this was going on in the late 90s, we had records that were being chased and stuff like that. Now it's just a bunch of dudes hitting home runs. And I'm telling you, I don't feel like, as much as everybody believes that home runs are what the people want, this doesn't seem to be borne out in actual popularity. I don't know anybody who wasn't a baseball fan before who is now getting into it because they see more home runs and, oh, by the way, more strikeouts. Forgive me, I'm an 80s National League baseball fan. I would rather watch people slap the ball on AstroTurf and run around than see these dudes hack at it as hard as they can. But I got no evidence that all this hacking for home runs is making people watch any more baseball than they would.
Actually, the opposite, Bo, right? The game is worse now because of this. And that's what baseball is trying to counteract. The problem is it just the ball? And listen, part of the reason that I ended up in sports is that you put math and science into my head and the gears kind of stop working. So me trying to understand the 0.8 of a milliliter difference in the third wooling or whatever is not going to work out for me ever. So I'll just say that if they're aiming for consistency so that over the course of a number of years, we can't point to the ball as the difference in the numbers that guys are hitting, that's good. That is absolutely what they should aim for. Is it going to fix the problem of baseball not being as good to watch right now? maybe the shift is part of the issue. Like, if guys don't think they can get balls in play, then they're swinging for the fences. Maybe it is the focus on home runs contributing to strikeouts, making this a much less interesting game because plays aren't being made. The ball is either in the catcher's glove or over the fence. And outside of that, there's a whole lot of just waiting in between. Baseball's got a lot of problems. And one of them is arguing over whether the ball is contributing to the change in the style of play. And so if they fix that, good.
The problem is, like, I have no idea what the problem is, and I don't trust that the people who have the means to figure out what the problem is are ever going to say what the problem really was. So therefore, I can't trust that they're ever really going to fix it in the way that I would feel. It's like, no, I want to look at a baseball. I can't see inside of it. I just want to trust that it is a baseball. Like, there's no other sport where you're like, is this basketball a basketball or not?
Katie, it's, I know you're from New England, I know, but sometimes we do wonder what's in a football.
The point I don't want to have to think about the ball. Yes, I love dingers, but the reason you love dingers is because when they happen, they're an achievement. When it becomes something that's just very easy, then they lose all of their value. You want to see people chasing home run records, not smashing in 2019 the league record that was set in 2017. Like, it's too much. Fix the dang ball. It's your only job. Make sure the fields exist and there's a ball to play with.
Let me ask, I just want to ask this simple question. Has anything been made more fun by giving the dorks more of a voice? Baseball.
Probably.
Put it together. Yes. It's right there. The more we let the dorks come up with smart stuff, the less we have fun.
Up next on HQ.
Let me tell you what it seems to me to be very clear that T.O. is worried about, since he say he not worried about that. Going to the gym. He is still waiting on somebody to give him a call. He and Shannon Sharp both are like, I am ready to show back up in my gold jacket and play if you need me to. Sarah, you intrigued?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I was listening, but I was just looking at his arms and thinking, you're asking me to disagree with whatever he says? Absolutely not. That man is terrifying. Look at those arms.
Do you question if Milos Teodosic deserves another shot in the NBA?
All right, you may remember Milos Teodosic. He played for the Clippers for a little while. He is from Serbia, and, you know, they got a lot of South Side in their game over there. What did he do here in this Italian basketball game?
Italian.
Whoa!
Like a cartoon.
There we go.
How have I never seen that before?
Gotcha.
I love you.
You gotta have long arms to pull that off, man.
Yeah,
I am impressed.
So much time.
It's amazing to see something you've never seen done before, especially something that was so obviously out of a Looney Tunes cartoon. How did no one ever think of this?
No, I've seen it done with the Globetrotters.
I'm honestly intrigued by how much time there is between every move made on that basketball court, and I need to see more.
He doesn't deserve another shot because of how slow everything is.
Hold on, what would be better, if we put him on the Globetrotters or we snuck him on the Generals as a ringer?
Ooh.
Do you guys want to see another Milos Teodosic play?
Well, there you go.
Uh-huh. Oh.
This camera work.
Oof. Oh!
Shut
what?
Up! Why?
Yo, how has nobody over there fought him over these things?
That doesn't make any sense.
That's the height of disrespect.
Streaming online. Untold Stories.
All right, the homie Master Tess Fashion at Bleacher Report's got his show Untold Stories. Check it out. And here he is talking to T.O., who basically seemed to have come on because he saw that Master had talked to Donovan McNabb before, but he swears he's over it.
Will it ever be a point of reconciliation, you think?
I heard him say,
15 years, 20 years?
I heard him say he's moved on, and he puts up the deuces. Bro, at the end of the day, he don't make me, man. Like I said, I'm in the Hall of Fame for what I've done and what I've accomplished. I appreciate the opportunity to have played with him. But at the end of the day, like I said, check my stats before I got there and check my stats when I left. He's supposed to be the great quarterback or one of the top quarterbacks in the league. In his mind, you can't go to Washington and not beat out Rex Grossman.
Do you think he belongs in the Hall of Fame?
I could care less. At the end of the day, I'm worried about me. I could care less about that.
Let me tell you what it seems to me to be very clear that T.O. is worried about, since he say he not worried about that. going to the gym. He is still waiting on somebody to give him a call. He and Shannon Sharpe both are like, I am ready to show back up in my gold jacket and play if you need me to. Sarah, are you intrigued?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I was listening, but I was just looking at his arms and thinking, you're asking me to disagree with whatever he says? Absolutely not. That man is terrifying. Look at those arms.
Katie, you intrigued?
Yeah, I'm totally intrigued. I love watching athletes talk about stuff that they say they don't care about or think about at all on a show called Untold Stories. It's all very meta and confusing, and I'm totally in on it.
All right, that is our show. Sarah Spain, check out her podcast, That's What She Said. Katie Nolan, check out her podcast, Sports with a Question Mark. You can check out my podcast. It's called The Right Time.
Do all of it, or we'll come
for
you.
We all have podcasts.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.